And welcome everybody to this February 2024 edition of Business Spotlight as we continue to showcase the amazing world-class healthcare that's available to us here in Erie at UPMC Hammett. Today we're very excited to be joined by Dr. Madhurbeet Singh, cardiologist at the UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute at UPMC Hammett. Dr. Singh, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, Dr. Singh, you are the ideal Business Spotlight guest this month because February is American Heart Month. Before we discuss that, can you tell us about the road you've traveled that has led you to UPMC Hammett?
Oh, I would love to. So I grew up in Chicago. I did my training. I did my medical school and my residency in Chicago. And I went to Pittsburgh. I trained at UPMC Presbyterian in Pittsburgh for my cardiology training, and subsequently trained in a subspecialty, cardiac electrophysiology, which is focusing on heart rhythm disorders, and was given the opportunity at that time to come up to Hammett. And this was in 2016. I finished my training in 2015 because there was definitely a need for a bigger program here to support the pathology that's here, and also a need for taking care of these patients locally as opposed to having the expectation that they should have to leave Erie to get high-level care. So I've been here since 2016. My wife is from here, which also really helped the move, and here I am 7.5 years later, still going strong.
Doctor, can you share some key insights into the importance of American Heart Month and why it's crucial for raising awareness about heart health?
Yeah, I think heart disease continues to be just such a big issue for us in the U.S. and just globally. And I you know, this is the 100th year of American Heart. So this was established in 1964 by six cardiologists in Chicago. And it was felt at the time that they were living, the quote was, "We are living in a time of almost unbelievable ignorance about heart disease." This was by one of the six cardiologists at the time. And I don't think we're living now, 100 years later, in a time of unbelievable ignorance about heart disease, but we're still living with a lot of heart disease that's either undertreated, underrecognized. A lot of it is being adequately treated and very well treated, but you know, it's still the number one killer. One out of four deaths in the US are still attributable to heart disease, whether it's a heart attack, whether it's a stroke. And you know, since 1999, there has been about 4% per year decrease in death from a heart attack, but there still continues to be a large problem with people with either dying from heart disease or having chronic debilitating symptoms because of heart disease. So I think the issue is still there 100 years later. Actually, Lyndon B. Johnson was the president who proclaimed February being American Heart Month in 1964, and 10 years later died of a heart attack at his ranch in Texas. So that issue still exists today. It's important for us to recognize this. It's important for us to do research. It's important for us to have resources to screen patients and people. It's important for us to have an infrastructure in place to take care of people who've had this and manage them in the long term.
Engaging your response to the last question, Dr. Singh, it really is a positive thing that we shine a light on heart health during February. However, there is still work to be done.
Couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely.
So what are the most common misconceptions people have about heart health, and how can we address and correct them?
I think there's a lot. I've heard it all. You know, this is a disease of old people. Men are affected more commonly with this than women are. I work out and I'm skinny, so I'm not at risk for heart disease. I have no symptoms, so everything must be okay, and I don't need to be screened, and I don't need routine preventative care. Or the other end, you know, my father had heart attacks, my grandfather had heart attacks, so all hope is lost. I'm going to end up having heart disease, so why even bother? You know, if you have heart disease, I should take it easy. I should slow down and not stay active. Well, doc, can't you just put a stent in me if I have a heart attack and just fix this for me? I take cholesterol pills, I take blood pressure pills, I take diabetes pills, so I'm fine, right? I think there are a lot of myths and a lot of misconceptions that I've just kind of thrown out there. I think education is the biggest piece. You know, that's where organizations like American Heart Association is so good at what they do. That's where recognizing this by celebrating a month of, you know, just focusing on heart care, men, women, you know, minorities. I think that's where it's so important. You know, young people have heart attacks. Marathon runners have heart attacks. We had that happen at Presque Isle last year and, you know, got some national notoriety because of this marathon runner who had a cardiac arrest midway through the marathon. People who've had bad coronary disease, bad family history of coronary disease, don't necessarily have to have heart attacks as long as they're living a good life. You could be skinny and working out, but if you're smoking and drinking excessive alcohol and not getting enough rest, you could still be at risk of having a heart attack. You don't have to slow down if you've had a heart attack. You know, there are a lot of factors that go into it, but we want you to stay active and maintain a healthy lifestyle. And if you're debilitated after a heart attack or some other chronic cardiac conditions and not able to do what you want to do, then we need to talk about it. And there's help available. There's cardiac rehab. There's all sorts of resources that are available. So I think the very loaded answer to your question, But my biggest answer to that is there is just so much education available for all these myths that exist out there, and we just have to educate the population.
Dr. Singh, I know you see a lot of patients with atrial fibrillation, or AFib for short. Can you explain exactly what that is, and is it life-threatening?
So that's the bread and butter of what I do. So when I mentioned earlier that I finished my training in cardiac electrophysiology, that focuses on heart rhythm disorders. And the most common heart rhythm disorder, not just in the US, but globally, is atrial fibrillation. The most recent data suggests that there's probably about 5 to 6 million people in the US alone who have atrial fibrillation. And that is probably undercounting the true number of people that are out there because there are no good screening efforts for mass screening efforts for atrial fibrillation. So that 5 million is expected to be 12 million by 2030. So in the next 6 years, we're expecting that to almost double. And what it is, it's a very irregular and chaotic rhythm that develops in the upper chambers of the heart. So instead of, you know, the heart's the pump, and every pump has a timer. And the timer to our heart is supposed to be a nice, well-regulated heartbeat that occurs 60 beats a minute, 80 beats a minute. If you're exercising, it's 120, 130 beats a minute. What happens with atrial fibrillation is the timer goes bad. And it goes bad for several reasons. The biggest risk factor is age, but it could be diabetes and high blood pressure and obesity and having had a heart attack. But the bottom line is the timer goes bad, and now the heart loses its ability to pump efficiently 60, 70, 80 beats a minute at rest, and the activity becomes very chaotic. The resting heart rate becomes 110, 120 beats a minute. And each beat is not a well-regulated beat because the heart's not emptying efficiently. So you develop symptoms like chest pain and shortness of breath and racing heart, lightheadedness and shortness of breath. And it definitely impacts your longevity. You know, the biggest concern with atrial fibrillation is risk of stroke. If you have atrial fibrillation, your risk of stroke goes up 5 times compared to someone who does not have atrial fibrillation. And the strokes that occur with atrial fibrillation tend to be much more devastating because they're much bigger strokes. The clots that form in the heart with atrial fibrillation can be big clots. And if one of those clots breaks off and goes into the brain, these strokes lead to some catastrophic events. So it's definitely a life-threatening issue. There's also some data that people in atrial fibrillation, even if they don't have a stroke, tend to not live as long. It's not still fully understood specifically what about atrial fibrillation shortens someone's lifespan, but there is some good data that could be true. And that keeping people in rhythm, whether it's with medications, whether it's with procedures called an ablation, does tend to add years to their lives. Does that answer your question?
It sure does, doctor. And I want to follow up with, you hear the term flutter thrown around. If someone experiences what's referred to as a flutter, how seriously should it be taken?
Yeah, I think anytime you feel something in your chest, it should not be easily dismissed. If you have fluttering in your chest, it could be something completely benign, but still needs to be evaluated so we can say confidently this is benign. You know, if you're 25 and you have fluttering in your chest, the first thing on my list is not AFib. We still worry. We worry, could this be some other arrhythmia that we need to address and fix? But if you're 70 and you come in and tell me your heart's racing and you have fluttering and you're lightheaded, the first thing that's on my radar is this AFib? And you know, we need to screen you for that. So absolutely correct. You know, if you have pain, pressure in your chest, if you're short of breath, exerting yourself, and you weren't 6 months ago, you know, that we need to at least evaluate you. It may not be your heart, but as you said, it's too important to ignore it. So what else is, if you're experiencing any symptoms or discomfort in your chest, please reach out to us at Heart and Vascular Institute at UPMC Hammett.
Let's pivot now and talk about sudden cardiac death. It's been in the news a lot over the course of the last couple of years. Is there any warning before sudden cardiac death? What do symptoms feel like, and what percentage of people survive sudden cardiac death? I know those are multiple questions, but let's dig deep into this.
Yeah, so that's, you know, another thing that's very near and dear to my heart, no pun intended. Just being an arrhythmia specialist is prevention of sudden cardiac death. So the biggest thing I want to first of all mention is the difference between sudden cardiac death and a heart attack. I think that still gets confusing. A heart attack is an acute closing of one of the arteries to the heart. So crushing chest pain, collapsing, having to go to the hospital, getting a stent put in, opening up the artery. A cardiac arrest is a sudden collapse. There is no warning. So a true cardiac arrest is people have no recollection of what happened. They just, it's a drop attack. You could be running, you could be doing a marathon and you have a drop attack. And that's what I alluded to earlier. This gentleman who was running the Presque Isle Marathon last summer from Central PA, and he was with his sons, and one of the sons was actually a physician. And I think they had gotten ahead of him. And this gentleman was a marathon runner, had a cardiac arrest, no warning, mid-marathon, drops dead. That's what it is, it's death. And there happened to be two Hammett nurses who started immediate CPR, and the paramedics arrived and shocked him. And I'll go more into the details about you know, prognosis with this, and was brought in here and actually had coronary disease. So here's a 60-some-year-old marathon runner. As I said earlier, you know, that doesn't mean you couldn't have coronary disease. He had coronary disease, ended up getting a stent put in, made a remarkable recovery, and ended up going back home. So sudden cardiac death is without warning. It's a drop attack. And the reason it's the prognosis is so poor, I think there's several reasons. Number one, it has to happen in a setting where there's someone around for your life to be saved. If you're by yourself and you have a cardiac arrest, unfortunately, most of the times that's a terminal event. For every minute that someone does not get CPR in the setting of a cardiac arrest, the likelihood of their survival goes by 10%. So if you've been down for 10 minutes and you have not received CPR, the likelihood of meaningful survival, meaning neurologically intact, is close to 0%. So assuming you have a cardiac arrest that happens in a setting where there are people around, the biggest thing is someone has to start CPR. They have to recognize it as a cardiac arrest and they have to start CPR. You have to check a pulse. You have to see if the person is breathing or not and start CPR. The next biggest thing is get a defibrillator and see if you can shock this person back into rhythm and obviously call the paramedics also. If all of that happens, the likelihood of someone surviving what we call an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, meaning they get resuscitated, they go to the hospital, they get the care that they need, the likelihood of them leaving the hospital is 10%. So the numbers are dismal for survival in the setting of an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest carries a mortality of about 80%. So because these people aren't getting immediate CPR, is it because they're not getting shocked immediately? Is it because by the time they're getting the help, it's too late? You know, there's many factors that play into this. But there's about 350,000 cardiac arrests that occur every year, and only 10% of those people actually survive discharge from the hospital. And that doesn't mean they're leaving the hospital in the shape that they entered the hospital. As I alluded to earlier, you know, they may not be neurologically intact. They may have had kidney failure. They may have lost a limb because the blood supply to the body was impaired during the episode of the cardiac arrest. So that unfortunately still continues to be a big problem. And there are just no good mass scale efforts to, you know, have AEDs available everywhere. There is a lot of education happening from AHA, but I think we could do so much more with this.
We're speaking with Dr. Madhurmeet Singh, cardiologist at the UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute at UPMC Hammett during this February 2024 edition of Business Spotlight. Dr. Singh, the cardiac care that's available at the UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute at UPMC Hammett is world-class and second to none. With the advancements in medical technology, what breakthroughs or innovations in cardiology are you most excited about that could positively impact patients at UPMC Hammett?
That's a great question. So from a selfish standpoint, because I am a heart rhythm specialist, the biggest thing on the horizon for us is something called pulse field ablation. This is the latest and greatest in managing atrial fibrillation. This is a specific tool for atrial fibrillation ablation, which is the most effective tool that we have available to keep someone in rhythm. And we're hoping to have access to this within the next few months here. And this is probably the most groundbreaking technology in all of cardiology in at least a decade. It's just a much safer way to perform an atrial fibrillation ablation and a much more efficient way. But, you know, just becoming less selfish, the things that have happened here in the last 8 years I've been here, you know, we've started a cardiac MRI program. So prior to, you know, 2016 or 2017, if you needed an MRI of the heart, which is a very specific test to evaluate the heart muscle, the heart strength, the heart valves, you had to leave town to get a cardiac MRI. And now we are doing as so many cardiac MRIs on a weekly basis. And it's such a useful tool for us to have available locally. TAVR valves are pretty much, you know, we're doing about 150 TAVR valves a year here. So that's instead of you needing an open heart to fix aortic stenosis. So that's the most common valve issue that comes up as our population gets older is a tight aortic valve. Now we're doing that percutaneously. Instead of you needing an open heart, it's done through a stick in the artery in the leg. The pacemakers and defibrillators that are available to us, they're becoming smaller. We're not using long wires to put in the heart to pace the heart anymore. The defibrillators we have available, we're not even putting them in the bloodstream. We're putting them under the skin. You know, there's so many things I could go on and on. The nice thing is we have access to all of this here at the same time that UPMC in Pittsburgh has access to it, at the same time as other large centers across the country have access to it. There's really no delay for us to get access to this, all of this advanced technology at this point.
Doctor, heart disease can often be preventable through lifestyle changes. What are some practical tips that you could share with the listeners for maintaining a heart-healthy lifestyle?
Yeah, there's so many things that can be done. And you know, the nice thing today is you're a Google search away from finding out what to do. But you know, this is in my mind, this is four-pronged approach. You have to stay active. That's the most important thing you can do. You have to get exercise. It doesn't mean you have to get on a treadmill. I tell my patients this all the time. You don't have to go get on a treadmill and start running every day, but you have to get some aerobic activity. 150 minutes of aerobic activity every week. So that's 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. Get your heart rate up. Go for a power walk. Get on an elliptical. Go swim. Go hike. Go run if you want to go run. Number two is diet. Unfortunately, Western diet is just still such a big problem. And, you know, it's just a big contributor to heart disease. So avoid things that we all know are bad. Avoid fast food, avoid red meat, avoid excessive salt, avoid saturated fats, avoid sugars. It's okay to have cheat days. You know, it's impossible to maintain a diet. I cheat, but you know, allocate a day or 2 days over the month if you want to have a cheat day. You know, there's no formula to this. But prioritize things like fiber, vegetable, fruit, beans, whole grains, good proteins, you know, fish and chicken and lentils and eggs and tofu and, you know, unsalted nuts. Avoid butter, use vegetable oil, avoid creamy dressings, use oil-based salad dressings. And manage stress. That's the third thing. You know, it's a stressful world out there, but figure out a way for you to manage your stress. And number four, get preventive health care. You have to have good contact with a physician or a provider that you trust. Have a primary care provider that you trust. If you need to have a cardiologist that you're seeing once a year or twice a year. Make sure your blood pressure is fine. Make sure your glucose is controlled. Make sure that your cholesterol is controlled. You know, whatever needs to be done. There's so much that can be done, and there are so many tools available these days to be able to achieve this.
Dr. Singh, how has COVID-19 affected heart health? And what advice do you have for individuals trying to prioritize their cardiovascular well-being during these challenging times?
Yeah, COVID has been tough, and hopefully we're on the tail end of this. But COVID was terrible for coronary heart disease. And I'm not even talking about COVID causing, you know, cardiomyopathies or weakening of the heart muscle or atrial fibrillation or heart attacks. I'm just saying people not getting care during the COVID pandemic because we were all on lockdown and your prescriptions were running out and you didn't get an opportunity to go see your doctor to get prescriptions refilled. People became sedentary. We were all on lockdown. There was not much to do. We were watching Netflix and binging on food at home. If you were having issues, you didn't want to come into the hospital. So people ignored their care because there was COVID in the hospital, and obviously that was a scary thought. So, you know, people sat at home with heart attacks and people sat at home with strokes. People were having issues that could have been prevented early on, but they just were afraid, understandably, to come into the hospital. So I think we're probably going to see the effects of that for a long time. I'm not even sure we fully still recognize and understand the downstream effects of what happened over the last 3 to 4 years. I think ultimately there are resources available even if you are on lockdown. And, you know, it's hard to do, but it can be done. Stay active, eat healthy, limit your screen time. Telemedicine has taken off because of the COVID pandemic. So now you can get in touch with your doctor, whether it's with a video visit or just sending a message over an app, or even if it's a telephone call. You know, thankfully, there are so many other resources that have popped up in healthcare because of the COVID pandemic that hopefully it leads to staying more in contact with your healthcare team, whether it's another pandemic or just on a routine basis.
Are there specific symptoms or signs of heart problems that people might overlook? And how can they differentiate between normal discomfort and something potentially more serious?
Yeah, I tell my patients all the time, if you think something is wrong, call. Don't ignore it. You know your body. If one day you are going for a run and you've always run and you're unable to complete your run because you got really winded or you got lightheaded or your heart's racing or you developed chest pain, that's a problem. You need to get in touch with us. But there are a lot of symptoms that could be very, very more nuanced, and you do need to pay attention. So if your legs are swollen and they weren't swollen a year ago, your pants aren't fitting because your waist is getting big quickly, you know, not over the years, but 6 months ago, your pants fit and they don't fit now. You're fatigued and you're unable to complete tasks because you're just running out of gas, you're running out of energy. You're having palpitations, you know, as you said earlier, anything happens in your chest, don't ignore it. Exercise intolerance. You were able to vacuum the house and now you're unable to vacuum it without having to take breaks. There are a lot of subtle things there which could be ignored. But what I always say is you know your body and pay attention. And if you think something's not right, you need to be evaluated.
Dr. Singh, we can't thank you enough for your time today. You've done a spectacular job discussing heart health, especially with the focus on February being American Heart Month. In conclusion, can you share a success story or memorable patient experience that highlights the positive impact of early detection and intervention in preventing or managing heart conditions?
Yeah, I think the most notable thing that I can think of in the last couple of years was a 40-some-year-old painter, you know, talk about paying attention to your symptoms, who went to his doctor because he couldn't paint anymore. He couldn't finish painting a house without shortness of breath and fatigue and couldn't finish doing the tasks that he wanted to do. And he was actually found to be an AFib. Now, AFib generally is a disease of the elderly. The highest incidence of AFib occurs in people over the age of 65, but we still stumble upon AFib every now and then in someone in their 30s, 40s, definitely in their 50s. And this person actually happened to be an AFib and kind of took a long-winded route to come see us for managing AFib. And I actually ended up offering him an ablation very early on, as opposed to trying shocking the heart rhythm, and sometimes we try medications to keep you in rhythm. And as I mentioned earlier, ablation is the most successful tool we have available to keep you in rhythm. And I did his ablation about 2 years ago, and this is actually a friend of a friend. And I know that he has had an incredible quality of life since then, because we interrupted the course of his AFib very early on. And he's back to doing what he wants to do without any limitations at all. He's back to being a normal, healthy 40-some-year-old man at this point.
Thanks again to our special guest today, Dr. Medharmeet Singh, cardiologist at UPMC Hammett, as we recognize American Heart Month. If you are experiencing chest pains or chest discomfort, Dr. Singh and the professionals at the UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute at UPMC Hammett can be reached at 814-877-5600. Again, that's 814-877-5600. Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. You can access today's program or other episodes of Business Spotlight by clicking on the podcast tab on our homepage. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, presents another episode of Barron Talks.